This is the No Dama Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by Amy Kaepernick, front-end Jedi, tech evangelist, and dog lover, joining me from Perth, Australia. Thank you very much for taking time out of your morning, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
To start off, Amy, can you tell me a little bit about yourself, please?
So, as you've already said, I am a front-end developer. About 5 years ago, I started my own business. And since then, I've been working to help small to medium businesses to get an online presence and to not only build, but to maintain and update their websites to just kind of make the world of tech a little bit easier for them. I also work as an evangelist for YAO conferences. So if you're not familiar with YAO conferences, they are a very large tech conference across Australasia with conferences run in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, Perth, Singapore, and Hong Kong. So I'm now one of three Perth-based evangelists, so it means I get to spend a lot of time in the community and seeing what's happening in the tech community in Perth, which is really exciting. And I also, you know, in the very little spare time I have left after that, I spend a lot of time blogging and spending a bit more time in the community just trying to share my experiences. So help out at a few of the community coding events we have, like Perth Web Girls and Node Girls and our junior dev meetups.
Why did you choose to start your own business?
I originally started building websites when I helped my parents out with their first website, and just talking to them, I realized how difficult it was as a small business for them to get online and to update it. And it was really expensive, and the developer they'd originally gone with made things really difficult for them. And I just thought this really shouldn't be so hard. There was an expectation that all businesses need to have an online presence these days, but it just wasn't feasible for so many businesses. So I decided to try and make that a little bit easier for them.
Go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Were you developing, were you doing web design as a hobby before that, or was that your introduction to web design?
So I first got started in web design with my parents' business when I originally rebuilt it for them, and then a bit after that. So from there I realized how much I enjoyed it, and so started teaching myself web development from there, and then started my own business. So I've been doing it freelancing on the side for about 5 to 6 years now, and have also spent a bit of time working full-time at an agency as well.
You also presented conferences and the like, so you've been at some of the big ones like NDC and others.
I do. So last year my goal was to get to at least one community conference, like a DDD type conference. I ended up giving two keynotes in events across two different states, and then started off this year really strong by speaking at NDC London in January, and I'm also heading off to NDC Minnesota in May, and will then be at in Oslo in June. So hopefully might get a bit of a break then, but hopefully I'll also have a few more conferences, or at least one more conference towards the end of the year as well.
Tonight, or this morning in your time, we're going to talk primarily about CSS Grid. But before we get on to that, can you give a little bit of the history of web page layouts and how it's been done over the years?
Yeah, so layouts in CSS technically very new. So originally, if we go right back to the history of layouts, originally layouts actually came from HTML when we did the table layout. this was the first time when we started to try and change how our content looked on the page, rather than just letting it flow as HTML did. Most of us are probably familiar with the table layouts from experience, from our nightmares, something like that. Although it was really useful to break up the page, we started to make it really complicated. So table was really useful for breaking up the page so that we could control where the content's at. However, when you had a table inside a table, inside a table, inside a table, inside a table, yes, it started to be a nightmare to try and maintain that one. So that was a little bit hard. Around this time, we finally started to use an actual CSS property for doing our layouts. And that's when we started to use float-based layouts. And I can send through any links to examples I've got for these as well, if that helps anyone understand them. It's really difficult to explain these without a visual example. When we use float-based layouts, that's when we started to actually follow the separation of concerns principle, which meant that our HTML was just where we defined our content, and our CSS was where we defined how that content looked and how it was laid out on a page. Unfortunately, we also found this wasn't great either. When we started to have to clear fix everything, and we also had to do a lot of complicated math to go, well, this item should be 33.3333 pixels wide, but then I want a gap between them, so I've got to work out how much gap I need to take out. No one likes to do math, so that one got really hard. But then we finally started to have a proper CSS layout property, which was display flex. So that was Flexbox. Flexbox was the first CSS property that was actually built for using for layouts, which was really exciting. And after all of our complicated math, Flexbox was really great because it did a lot of that math for us. So that was really exciting to do, but for a full page layout, Flexbox still didn't work too great either. So it was really exciting when a couple of years ago we finally had CSS Grid come along, which is actually properly built for doing a two-dimensional layout on our web page.
How long ago was Flexbox? I'm not a front-end designer, and in the prep for this podcast, I've come across Flexbox, but it was a new term for me.
So Flexbox has definitely been around for at least a couple of years longer than CSS Grid. I'm not sure if I'm able to see.
No, that's okay.
So Flexbox was first supported with a browser prefix in 2012.
Okay, so
by, unsurprisingly, Google Chrome.
7 years. So that's pretty long in the web world these days. But then you were saying,
yeah,
Flexbox, things were okay, but CSS Grid came along. So what's CSS Grid?
So CSS Grid is, in my opinion, it's magic. It's
okay.
What it does makes our jobs as front-end developers, and even non-front-end developers, anyone putting together a layout, it makes our lives so much easier. So CSS Grid helps us to define both directions of a page, so both across the page and vertically down the page, how things are laid out, how big things are, whether or not items on a page should change size when a screen is bigger or smaller, whether or not things should flow down in different directions, making sure that everything lines up perfectly as it should, and taking into account all of the different things we need to be able to do. Do we need to say that this element needs to be 200 pixels wide only? Should it be 30% wide? Should it be 30% wide but not get more than 200 pixels? Or should all of the elements be any size they want as long as they're all exactly the same size? We're able to define all of these different things within CSS Grid, and after going through hacking table layouts and float properties, the fact that we've actually had something that's designed for this use has been incredible.
But is it different than responsive web design? I'm not a front-end designer, but I've seen pages that adapt to being smaller, being larger, being wide on phones, on tablets, and so on.
Yeah, so we've always been able to do it, but CSS Grid makes it easier. So using whatever properties we did, we were able to change it. Even just the other day, I did a layout that actually called for a table for once. And I was actually able to basically, for a smaller screen size, I was actually able to break the whole table apart so that each of the rows of the table were own separate elements and it stopped behaving as a table. We've always been able to manipulate it to change when the screen size became smaller, but it was often a hack. It was clunky and difficult and involved complex calculations and a lot of different media breakpoints, and it was really hard for us to code. So although as a user looking at the page, they saw that it worked when the screen size went smaller, it was really hard for us to actually code those layouts. Whereas CSS Grid, it takes into account the fact that we're wanting to be able to do that. So a responsive layout using CSS Grid, we're dramatically reducing how many lines of code we're having to write, how long it takes us to do that. So, for example, when I a few years ago, I moved my blog over to use CSS Grid in the layout. I got to delete like half of the code, and it flows so much easier. So I think I've got like 4 lines of code for the blog layout, because I just went, well, I want each of the blog articles in my layout to be at least 200 pixels wide, but they shouldn't be more than 400 pixels wide, and I want you to fit as many of them in the page as you can. And so it does that. So on a little screen size, it will take up, one article will take up the full width, because that's what it can. And as soon as it can fit 2 next to each other, they'll make them smaller so 2 can fit. And it does all of that math. It works out how many different blog articles they can fit across the screen. Will expand and contract so there's no leftover space. So it fills up all the available space. And once it's filled up one row, it drops them down to the next row. It takes into account all of those different things I need to be able to do. And even more than some of the options we've had beforehand, they also take into account things like gaps. So I don't have to say, well, I want something to be 25 pixels, 25% wide, and then have to work out how much I need to take out for a gap. I can say how big I want the gap to be, and it will then work out how wide the element needs to be, taking into account the gap that needs to be there as well, which was also really exciting to have in Grid.
Is it again, I'll say it for the last time, not knowing much about these kind of things, is it different than traditional CSS from a syntax perspective or from a how it looks, how you use it?
No. So from a syntax perspective, the properties are still defined in the same way. The properties are different. So there's a bunch of new properties that we use with Grid. At the moment, they're mostly all prefixed with Grid. For example, you've got your Grid template columns, which defines how many columns wide you want your grid to be. But the way we define it is the same way we do, as the same way we normally would a CSS property.
Do I need to add some packages to my website application to use CSS Grid, or is this very browser side?
This is all browser side, so you just write it in a normal CSS file.
But then if it is all browser side, I imagine you probably have to account for browsers that support it and browsers that don't support it.
Unfortunately, yes, you do. And unless you're doing a personal website and you really don't care, for example, both of my blogs do not look at browser support. I have Grid with no fallback whatsoever. So if someone's looking at it on a really old browser, it's going to look really funky. So CSS Grid actually has a fair bit more support than you would expect. So it was actually, for what I believe is the first time, it wasn't developed under browser-specific prefixes. So we're all used to having to do the WebKit hyphen, Moz hyphen, all of the different versions because the browsers have developed it a different way. So CSS Grid was actually developed under a feature flag. So it was tested and used by developers for a really long time. And then pretty much all at once, Chrome, Firefox, and Safari all removed that feature flag. And so CSS Grid launched in three major browsers all at the same time. And a lot of people were concerned. They were going, well, this is new, there's going to be bugs. But we'd already, because it was developed under the feature flag, the bugs were all worked out. And so it's had support in Chrome, Firefox, Safari, and Edge since 2017. In the world of tech, that's a pretty long time. Like, there's been 20 new JavaScript frameworks in that time. unfortunately, because Microsoft is no longer supporting it, unsurprisingly, it's not supported in Internet Explorer. Unfortunately, they've made things slightly... So Internet Explorer was actually technically the first browser to support CSS Grid, but they were developing an original and a previous version of the specification, and it's changed a lot since that originally happened. So Internet Explorer thinks that it can support Grid, but depending on what properties you're using and how you're using it in your layout, it doesn't properly support it, which is a bit unfortunate. Thankfully, having to deal with unsupported browsers isn't actually too difficult because we've got the CSS supports query. So if anyone's not familiar with it, the supports query is similar to a media query, except you've got at supports instead of at media. And instead of defining a particular screen width, we can define a particular CSS property. For example, display grid, which is how we tell the browser that we're using the grid layout on a particular element. What the browser will then do is it will check and see if it understands how to fulfill that property. And if it does, it will then process whatever code is inside the supports query. So you write your fallback layout as you normally would, and then write a grid layout inside of the supports query. And if the browser doesn't know what to do with display grid, it will just ignore all of it and use the fallback layout. So that's made it really easy, especially as although the supports query doesn't have full browser support, anything that doesn't support the supports query definitely won't support grid. So if it doesn't know what to do with the supports query at all, it'll just ignore it all anyway. So you're not having to actually give the browser code that's not going to know what it's doing with, because we've got that supports query there, which makes it much easier.
How much adoption of CSS Grid do you see there in the industry?
Quite a lot more. So there's actually a lot more being used, because the support is actually there. There are still a lot of places that are a bit more cautious with using it, and unfortunately, there are some places who still need to support IE, and so they're often a little bit slower with, well, if we've got to do a fallback, why are we doing the new thing in the first place? Other than that, there are a lot of people starting to use it. So I'm using it on quite a few of my projects, and that's fine. I've been doing some contracting recently for tech companies in Australia, and I'm even using it without fallbacks for some of them. So depending on your audience, no matter what your audience, there's no reason why you shouldn't be using Grid with a fallback. And depending on your audience, you may not even need that fallback.
How did Microsoft, Mozilla, and Apple all come to an agreement on supporting this? Or on what, on the standard, or whoever it was that came up with the standard?
So it was the CSS working group that came up with the standard. As far as I'm aware, they had people from each of the different browsers involved. If not involved, at least listening to what was going on. I'm not too sure exactly how they all work together to make it happen at once. I'm not going to ask questions, because it's kind of a good thing.
You know, I'm thinking that, because compared to JavaScript side of things, where it's fragmenting, you know, every day there's something different and something new. It sounds like this, because you're constrained that it can only run in the browsers, it can only run what is supported. You can't go off and do your own version of it, for example.
I'm not too sure how they ended up doing that.
Are there alternatives to CSS Grid that are out there or coming?
Not that I'm aware of. I know that there is version 2 of the CSS Grid spec, which is coming out soon. However, that will just sort of be a newer. So it's just adding a few more properties and a couple of extra features to the CSS Grid spec that we've already got. There's not really anything like Grid out there.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, is this something that's likely to be thrown out in a relatively short period? But it sounds like it's not, because if all these companies have come together and they're going along with whoever came up with it and they're embedding it into the browsers, they're not going to want to change it.
No, so CSS Grid is really starting to show the future of what we're going to be able to do with CSS. There will be a lot of very disappointed developers if they got rid of it.
Is there any relationship between Bootstrap and CSS Grid?
No. So Bootstrap is a CSS, it's like a framework which has, it did allow us to create a lot of our CSS layouts a lot more easily. However, Bootstrap is also responsible for why all of the websites look the same. So Bootstrap were the ones who came up with our 12 column grid where all of the websites are identical. If you have a look at a lot of the websites that were made within this particular period of time, they've all got the 12 column grid. They all look the same as each other. And so although Bootstrap was really useful to allow people who wouldn't normally be putting together layouts to put the layouts together, there were a lot of constraints around how you could actually make your website look. So there was less that designers were able to do during that time as well. So it meant that even designers were constrained to making sure that the design fit within those 12 columns. The great thing about CSS Grid is you get to define how many columns wide your layout is. So again, CSS Grid makes putting together the layout much easier, but we're not set to all of those different constraints. If a designer wants to make a website layout that's 11 columns wide, they can. If they want to make it 20 columns wide, they can. 3 columns wide. We're removing a lot of the constraints that have traditionally been around the types of layouts that we can create. And I think it will be really interesting to see how many websites are no longer using Bootstrap once they start using Grid, because you just don't have to anymore.
I was going to ask you, is there any reason to use them side by side?
Look, technically you could use Bootstrap as a fallback. The thing is, it can get a little bit complicated, and also for a lot of it, the HTML that Bootstrap is using isn't always the best. So you could use Bootstrap as a fallback and then put your grid code inside of the supports query. But honestly, depending on what browsers you're having support, you're probably better off just rewriting your layout using something like Flexbox. Flexbox is actually mostly supported back to IE10. And if anybody's having to support any older browsers than that, then I'm just really sorry.
They are out there. There are a lot of people having to support old stuff. What's coming next for CSS Grid?
So next is CSS Grid 2.1, which is going to be the updated specification of CSS Grid. So there's a few different things being worked on for this level 2 of CSS Grid. The most exciting thing for that is going to be subgrid. So what this is allowing us to do is to not only can control the different elements inside of a grid, but you can then control one level down what's happening inside of that element, so that whatever's inside of that still lines up with the grid as well. So particularly for grid layouts like a blog layout or something similar like that, you're able to define how child elements are laid out to make sure they're all lining up properly. Again, this is really hard to explain without a visual aid. So I can send through and really just an image to kind of that makes sense.
I'll add it to the blog post for you.
Yeah. So the most exciting thing that I'm aware of coming soon is the subgrid. So really excited for that to be coming soon, so that we can start to play around with that one as well.
Do you know when that is roughly?
Not too sure on that one. So the CSS working group is working on that one at the moment. Unfortunately, I've looked, I haven't found a date just yet. I'm hoping there may be a date soon, or at the very least, once we're able to start playing around with it in the browsers, would be awesome.
But I imagine, again, you have to wait for browser updates to support these new features.
You do, but hopefully we'll be able to play around with it even just in the developer versions of browsers and under feature flags, so we can at least sort of start to, because of that, we're able to actually get our heads around how it works and be comfortable using it. So it means that when it actually comes out in a browser, we're able to hit the ground running.
Any final notes before we wrap up for the evening, Amy?
If I've really confused anybody with trying to explain Grid with no visual aids, I highly recommend they check out NDC have released my talk from London on CSS Grid where I actually have visual aids. So that one is available on YouTube now. And actually, if anyone is interested, all of my talks are available on my speaker profile, which is speaking.amyskapers, that's AmyskaPers.tech, because unfortunately someone has registered the three-letter domain a.my. So had to get a little bit creative with that one. So that one has links to the video and all of my notes from those talks. And they also have information on my upcoming talks at NDC Minnesota and NDC Oslo. If anyone lives around there or just wants an excuse to go on a trip and try and convince work to pay for the travel or a free conference ticket, highly recommend checking those conferences out.
NDC Minnesota is May, isn't it?
Yes, so NDC Minnesota is the first week of May. I believe it's the week of the 6th of May. Yes, and then NDC Oslo is June.
Very good. Amy Kaepernick, thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
If you like this episode, you might also like episode 104 with Laura Elizabeth on design advice for engineers, or episode 27 with Deb Bigger on the importance of user experience, or episode 8 with Brian O'Neill on good design in software. Thank you. The opening music was Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Golden by Little Glass Men from their debut EP.